sizzle crickets today, or going to be, at least we're being told that, interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 428. As you can maybe type that into the search engine in the future with Real Liberty Media and find this broadcast content. Because I can only skip through the tops of what's going on, typically almost only through the titles, because they tell us a whole lot. Although a lot of time you go inside the story and it really isn't what the title says. Though we're not looking at the obvious behind woodshed. You're looking toward being able to see things that you can't see on your own. Without a code, without an experience, without a knowledge, without a wisdom in you, to protect yourself against those that are going to be coming against you. Like as we were looking in the chat, somebody was asking how come we didn't have nobody knew the answer to a musical trivia question. And someone said because they were only seven. And I was thinking about, well, some of us were actually trying to distance ourselves from the abortion that society would become. And look at us today. And so, it's just because we're not stepping up. And it guides what I say. And as the more I talk about how we have to take responsibility, the less the listenership gets. I'm getting down to the listener. Literally, the listener. And I thank you for being there. And I'm hoping, and the listener is doing something to protect himself. It's really what I'm only here to suggest is how to look at things and how to set up protections. As I was telling, and without getting too deep into it, with the Forest Service trespass that happened, you know, we're going back through all the laws to bring up more correctly how we're going to address the problem. And yes, it's ongoing. It's not an answer. We look at it one day, and so I've got the answer. The government has given itself a license to come after you, and people don't appreciate that, and so you have to defend yourself in certain ways. But anyway, we're looking even at the adequacy of our postings, even though they're completely adequate. We are given the opportunity here to look again and always tighten up anything that might look like an advantage that they might take. And for y'all, as I was telling the co-owner, what I tend to do more than look for remedy, set up remedy, which we do, is I'm looking to have a say against a liability. In other words, they try to come at you with all that so-called sovereign power. The cop is a sovereign citizen, not you. And you have to have an avoidance. And so this is what I set up for us. And that's what I'm asking you to learn about these concepts, these subject matters I bring up in title only sometimes, and anticipate some of this thing. The world becomes a little bit more understandable about really the crime that it is. We didn't go to be able to be in peace, actually. And no one really paid attention to that. And so you can't even be in peace. And it kind of tells you something here, the first story I'm going to go off with here. You're not even in peace when the government has the obligation to take care of you. And then you find out that the government is the perpetrator of the crimes. 2 years before his death, John McAfee posted a tweet saying, "If I suicide myself, I didn't. I was whacked." My whole interest in this is, well, someone got whacked under the care of the government, even in Spain. John McAfee's been suicided, it seems to me. And we have another one. Another voice that would dare to challenge the government. Whatever John McAfee was, he was innocent until proven guilty. And yet, he's no longer. So we are missing now another voice of opposition. McAfee died on Wednesday in Barcelona, Spain, shortly after a court ruled that he could be extradited to the U.S. on tax evasion charges. His lawyer, Javier Villalba, told Reuters that the death was suicide. So there's the systems agent saying it was suicide. Before, it was an actual autopsy. This is his attorney. John McAfee's attorney saying this. A spokeswoman for the Justice Department of Spain's Catalonia region said the death appeared to be suicide, but the final determination could come under as Spanish officials conduct an autopsy, obviously. So, it's all in the government to say. He does not get the final say. It's the kind of thing I'm telling you about in your living. You don't really have the final say, so you have to set up records to show just the clear abuse that's going on, even to the prisoners, which you all is. That you'll complain it's government. And it's just a bunch of people that are determined to be occupiers in your life. The notes of this are that John, in 2019, John McAfee tweeted that he would, if he were to appear to die by suicide, it would not be true. Let me offer just a little bit. I don't know anything more than what you all see in the news, but his wife came on and said that he had just told her that she was going to contact her later that afternoon. They had already planned that this was going to go south on them for the extradition. They were setting up an appeal. That was confirmed in a head nod video that I saw by the attorney, the agent of the government, that they were setting up, that she didn't feel anything was amiss. And so she was anticipating a phone call, have a phone call that afternoon. John McAfee, as far as I can tell, at a distance, I didn't know the man, never corresponded with him, didn't seem like really to be a guy that gave up. And that with a number of different steps to go, and he was savvy about this, before he could be extradited, this is just not looking too good. So I'm going to be of the opinion here until, like, listen, I think I'm of the opinion at this point, Epstein whacked McAfee. And I want you to change my mind until I see different. I'm going to say that's what went on here. How an obscure app turned millions of unwitting spies for the U.S. military. This is a constant theme I've been trying to show you folks that you say, oh, I know that. Well, all the ones I hear saying I know that continue to engage and immerse themselves in the weapons of destruction against them. But here's another story from Zero Hedge, as I look at the reader. There's a growing cottage industry of the nexus of consumer research and government surveillance. All these dual uses that always seem to be tied to the military. In a report published Friday, the Wall Street Journal explored the world of a Premise Data Corporation, an innocently named firm that uses a network of users, many in the world, to complete being basic tasks for small commissions. And assignments can range from snapping photos of competitors' stores to counting the number of ATMs in a given area to reporting on a price of the consumer goods on the shelf. Roughly half of the firm's clients are private business seeking commercial information, most reporting on competitors' operations. Both the U.S. government and foreign governments have hired the firm to do more of advanced reconnaissance work while gauging public opinion. This was critical in this story about what I've been telling you for over a decade. What I told people before I got into broadcasting is that under this international law of the occupier has to gauge the temperament of the natives. And international rule number one of international law of an occupying force is don't piss them off. They will rise up and kill you. And so perception management is like a number one rule here in how this works. So that is critical in this story. Again, the military, dual use. You see all the earmarks of all the continuing plan being executed right in the news. If you just looked at that, just see that that's what's going on. And if you would just see this and not say, oh, okay, now that we see it, no, I'm in the prison, I'm just going to try and keep my head down. Okay, I guess you can do that. What kind of people are we then? If you don't care, then what kind of people is that? And then it comes down to, well, maybe we deserve what we're doing to ourselves. Now, I don't believe that I should be deserving of what you do to yourself affects me. Well, that's a trespass. That's a passive aggression, isn't it? So at some point, we're going to have to come together to agree what is really neutrality and how we live amongst ourselves and don't allow occupiers to come in. But here, surveillance and reconnaissance work is to gauge the public opinion. This is critical to understand. It's what I've been telling you all along. And then they can persuade you to believe things. And what may come up at the end, near the end of this broadcast, if I can get there. I've always been hanging out some more tabs again. I'm trying not to do that. But this perception management goes into maybe looking at this Kobe fraud. And somebody, I talked to a doctor, a researcher, supposedly, I talked about on this French researcher I talked about. The more information coming out, I'm wondering now if maybe the military is playing both sides of this, and remember, and I'm going to get to this right here, but maybe not tied to the link. But remember, if there is nothing there, which I think is the actual fact, there's nothing there. Both sides are lying to you, and this is the whole point right here. That this is all perception management. Why? Because the occupiers, which look, they come under the color of the established form of government you were told existed, are there strictly to create tools inside of the system to keep their reconnaissance on your temperament. And they took your temperature in Kobe fraud, and you passed. You passed in flying colors. You all took your temperature, and you decided that, well, 46 to 75% of you decided you were sick. You had to be told you were sick, and you agreed. And now they're clawing at the rest of the 20 or 30%. And I'm hearing people around me now giving in. People I would have never thought giving in. And so this is a perception management over time. You're incrementally being taken down. And until someone stands up and does it correctly, and it's going to take a group of people now, I think, we're looking for the future they want. This is what we've been saying all along. According to premise, the premise of the company is one of the growing number of companies that are straddling, quote, the divide between consumer survey services and government surveillance and relying on the proliferation, of mobile phones as a way to turn billions of devices into sensors that gather open source information useful to government security services. Premises CEO even hinted that the company had been tapped by foreign governments to help the setting policy that was setting policy about how to deal with vaccine hesitancy. Setting policy on how to keep your perception of those that go against what the future that they want. This is the military. Remember, warp speed. At warp speed, they came right at you, and I told you they were coming. Nobody really seemed to notice, and nobody seemed to care. So, I mean, I guess I'm reading more. I mean, on and on. There's more points. There's so many points in these articles. I almost literally take some of these articles and speak for 2 hours. Nobody would listen to it, but we could. We could talk about just how to dissect how each story would tell us what's been going on. It's again, everyone's onto the idea of fractals, that reality is built on these smaller forms that are built upon each other in resonance in multiples, that we can get to bigger macro stages from the same thing. And now we have graphics that will tell us. That's all we really are looking at here. Somebody has understood us better than ourselves and tapped into that natural law that nature is simple. It's built from basic, simple things. Partly why I can't understand how so-called science can actually know the difference between creation, which would have these simple things built in that it could replicate to, or evolution. So from science, that's has to be an open question, just in the observation. If I took understanding what science wants to believe about fractal things, you can build from the most simple. Like the hydrogen atom is an interesting one from which everything can be built. So when I start taking the one and it becomes a denominator of all, now I start to see maybe there can be, if you will, intelligent design. Maybe even if I wasn't even believing there was a writing that told us and suggested that it might be available. And so when you step back and start looking at things, I don't know. I have no clue. I'm going to have what I sense is the real thing. And I'm going to proceed in that. And I've told you, I've learned to be confident in that. Do my checks. Have humility and admit to my failures. And accept those things I can't change. And just move with what I've proven is how I ask you to start looking at your life and move forward with the confidence to stop oppression against you. And so the government's sitting there, the military, dual function, to use what? The phone, like I've told you, and others have, but I'm on record myself, to say this phone in your hand, having to remember numbers is a key to how they're going to bring most everybody into servitude. And when they get the consensus of everybody, they just move it and incrementally move it into the next point. Okay, so we talk about, this is third, private-public partnerships. I talked a little bit about that in the title of the broadcast yesterday. And again, I don't have these titles and these things on my blogcaster when I'm talking to you. I go back after when I'm building the link list up, and I just put those headings in to kind of get the mind to develop the ideas as I went. I make those up after when I finally hear what I said about it. I try to consolidate those titles. So the blogcaster becomes another extension of a communication you won't hear behind the woodshed on the broadcast, because it's not made until I see and sense what I was looking at and talking to you about. And it's just to direct the mind on what another point would be. But to hear, we see now the public-private partnership, the non-governmental organization, the third party, non-subject to constitutional constraints, infringement, possibility and potential, and likelihood in your life. And we're accepting it, if I can say it, in our right hand, for those of you that hold your phone in the right hand, and for those of you that don't, and use your right hand to pitch the numbers and the digits inside the screen, and we got it in your right hand anyway, because it's going through your brain, isn't it? And you're agreeing to all this stuff. And they're telling you what they're using it for. They're using it to come after you in different ways that you're oblivious to. And I'm not surprised anymore, but I'm always amazed to see how military is right there. And again, Sound Minds picked up on this years and years ago. And the crew now that Sound Minds has, that I understand, maybe people looking at what I'm saying and then going deeper to really qualify it for themselves. It's really hard. I can't. If I had any question at all before, everything that comes out in this deeper study gets even more tied up. And that's why I talked to you about the French researcher. When you look deeper in that, people who criticized him, both sides are self-referential in their proofs, and they're both connected to the military. And so what do I look at? I look and say, okay, there it is. There's that control. What are we being told? We're being told we're going to have to use the software of life, and there's going to have that going to happen at warp speed. And I'm saying, though there's a needle in the haystack of noise of information, there's nothing going on. They can pull the thing out that they need, but they just wait to get your capitulation, and there's no fight. And so, again, back to John McAfee. You don't think that there was surveillance on that, and all of a sudden what happened to the cameras on Epstein? All this stuff, I don't know what happened. Maybe they killed themselves. I don't know. But the government's not made it any easy to keep a distance on that question, have they? No, they whack people. And they're known to whack people. They're known to whack millions and millions of people. And we sit here like a bunch of cud-chewing cows. It just amazes me. You know, I better not get into that thought. How an obscure app turned millions of unwitting spies for the U.S. military. They talk about this in the context of foreign nations, Afghanistan, and all that. And I'm telling you, they tell you that you have exactly the technology in your hands. And they're talking that this is someone who's in the system that can do this, that's paid to do this by the government. And this is not even new knowledge. I'm bringing this story way up now from way back in 2019 I was going to tell you about. Just to show you, this is an ongoing threat that we've been talking about, that I try to tell you to wean yourself from all these as you can. We still have to use the technology because that's the way it works. It is convenient at points. But like somebody, you'll send me some links. I strip every ID from a link before I go and look at it. It's a pain. It takes extra time. But I'll search for a link without the identifiers to find if I can get at it with the most limited address in a browser that tells me it's somewhat private, and I understand the limitations there. And unless I'm using, when I go to use my Hunix in my VBox, I use Hunix VBox, and that gets me supposedly double coverage if I want to go anonymous. Why? Because I'm a criminal? No, because I don't want people understanding what I'm after and doing. And I've told you in the past, that's worked out real well to be able to walk up to an official, like the Forest Service official. We've been looking for you. I'm thinking, why? Why you been looking for me? Well, the point was they couldn't find us. And that was the point. They can't come and they can't terrorize us. And it gives me time watching them coming, and I can respond. I can call it out. You can too. That's what all this is. This whole maneuvering, this tactical stuff is all about. Maybe you don't see it now. Maybe you think you got it covered, but we don't. All this stuff that we're bringing into our lives is the Internet of Things, the military setup. Rumsfeld told you that at 9/11, and that's the reason why that's connected there. But now they told us that the private companies, not subject to any constitutional constraint, apparently, video security researchers develop apps to hack Alexa, Google Home devices. Now look what you hear. More and more and more, they're actually handing you devices that actually do this, that actually set up mesh networks when you buy them. Private mesh networks that are, I forgot to bring the story up. It seems like so much information under the bridge. They take your private data and put it on private mesh networks in the private company that does this when you buy their product, and then they sell it or they use it, they give it to the government to go do surveillance. So here, last 2019, security researchers develop apps. They were telling us. They were talking about specific things, but now we find it can be just about anything. It's your phone. Apple's doing it. Android itself is doing it. Okay, they're handing you the tools of your destruction, and you willingly take it on, and you don't. It takes a lot of effort. I don't have enough energy in some of this. I go very slow about this. I still haven't got it all the way I would like to. And I don't have the intelligence anymore to figure out all the stuff that's required. Young minds might be able to do that because it's like normal to them. To me, it's more like maybe being a Luddite isn't such a bad thing. I'm just going to keep a distance. We still have to communicate, though. Even though I'm not a criminal, the people I talk to, I don't believe are criminals. We're just trying to keep the occupier from intruding a little too much more than it ought to, even as being an occupier. And it's interesting that there's that limit, I think. I think it's huge, huge that there's a limit even. Because they know the first rule of international law is don't piss off the natives. And they've got they took your temperature. They know this country. They know the global populations are going to succumb to the mere suggestion of a non-fatal killer they have to tell they've got or be threatened against to go ahead and accept a bioweapon that's going to control them. And I want you to remember about, if I hope I got to get through this, remember about this injection and what it might do, and on the hydrogels and the 5G. I'm not getting into 5G on all this. You just have to understand the technology that's coming. When I was talking about phased array and pinpoint and power, and all this stuff is sitting there to build. And I want to bring up another tab from way back when, the fantasy of opting out. Those who know about us have power over us. Obfuscation may be our best digital weapon. This spoke to me a lot that way back when I put this back in 2019 as well. I never got to these tabs. They're current right now. They're actually functioning right now. That I was telling you, we got to work out systems to be the ghost in the machine. We have to be inside the system that it can't really track us, and we can't be known for all that. I don't know how that's all going to go, but that's what people need. If it's not me, and it's not anybody I know, and it's not in the nearest future, in the coming future for younger people. I'm talking now Generation Z, whatever. I'm talking the teenagers that are sensing there's a problem, are starting to rebel right now, don't quite know what to do. They don't know about getting behind the woodshed and that kind of thing, and they're not directed to, because my listener, the single listener out there, just has only held so much time to defend themselves as well, and can't help promote the broadcast. But opting out here of the situation is a fantasy, and it has to be when you consider all the things you notice are coming in and being made smart, S-M-A-R-T, it's not a word, it's a condition. That S-M-A-R-T, each one of those letters means something. Consider a day in the life of a fairly ordinary person, large city in a stable, democratically governed country. Not a Republican form representative government at all with property rights. No, democratically communal property where no one has property rights, and you'll love it. Now, she is not in prison or institutionalized, nor is she a dissident of an enemy of the state, yet she lives in a condition of permanent and total surveillance, unprecedented in the imprecision of an intimacy. If she's not in a prison, then she's in an occupied country. And she's in that panopticon that the occupier needs in order to watch you. Panopticon comes to my mind, again, to his credit. Who also talked about all this and all the underpinnings, but himself didn't understand it, William Roberts. And, as I maybe ungraciously did not recognize, John McAfee was another, whatever he was and wasn't, he was out there to try to defend himself against oppression. And rest in peace, John McAfee. Rest in peace, another gentleman who I would listen to William Roberts, who were telling us things. They're gone. Their voice is gone. One day mine will be too. Whatever anybody thinks of it, mine will be too. And then what are people going to do? They're already accepted into it. It's really fascinating. So consider the day of an ordinary person, totally oblivious to the prison they live in. Even the article suggests that's not a prison. And that we had an expectation of privacy they've gotten rid of by your right to contract. Or your self-purchase of products that have, they give you notice under privacy notices, which there are none. And so, I don't know how much more to say. You all that are listening to me know that already agree, know with this. You agree with me. So, there's not much to say here, but we as the class of people that could be the remnant are not doing much to really work to make a distinction and difference on how we move through. We remove our expectations of privacy. In fact, that becomes one of the studies we're doing on the Forest Service trespass. What's our expectation of privacy, and then in what context? I'm revisiting all that as I move through analyzing what are we going to do against an invasion of a Forest Service agent and somebody else we haven't yet identified to diminish our exclusive possession right. That's property, folks. That's not democracy. And yet nobody seems to understand that. And they give lip service. And when you go tell the officials, like the sheriff is supposed to keep the peace, he's supposed to arrest breaches of the peace, they wipe their hands of this. What does that mean, folks? Not just lawlessness. You don't live in a peaceful place. And most people, I guess, agree with that. We'll move over here. The fantasy of opting out. Yes, this article spoke to me in spades. You are grown into... What is the Matrix is not a movie, folks. I don't know why that didn't even come to my mind until just then. You are born into this place, and it's a prison. And you do everything, it seems, to maintain that. It's comfortable. I just want to eat the steak. It tasted so good. And so while you're being sedated by all this stuff and been kept track of, here's where we start getting into the, be careful, watch how we do this with these softwares of life and these magnetic and electromagnetic conditionings that can happen to it. These stories came up, and I think these were from the Sound Minds looking a deeper dive and coming back and saying, look at these things. Continuing on, the story continues on and gets better and deeper and more integrated. Goodbye, coffee? Service members might soon be fueled by a jolt to the brain. 40 active duty military personnel at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base participated in a study, one funded by NASA, in an attempt to analyze the efficacy of transcutaneous cervical vagus nerve stimulation in treating migraines and impacts of sleepiness. Pretty noble. Get rid of migraines and get people to go to sleep. Pretty noble. But this is the military. So we got dual function, dual use, don't we? Yeah, one possible way to enhance alertness could be by non-invasively. Think about this. These people think this is non-invasive. Stimulating an area of the brain called the locus coeruleus, said the study, and to do so, the study looked at how a non-invasive electrical neuromodulation device, which has also been used to treat drug-resistant epilepsy and depression, could influence the military's exhaustion-fueled abuse of energy drinks and coffee. Why? Because they have to stay alert but not too hyped up to keep track of you. And they are running into a problem with drug addiction or addictions of addicting things like you because they're dealing with the same animal creature who agreed to this nonsense in the beginning anyway. But so they've got a little bit of a problem. They're going to solve it non-invasively, they say. Fatigue is a serious and unavoidable problem for many professions, such as medicine, transportation, and the military. You all will agree with this. This is not the challenge. The challenge is to how they keep you sedated, but they keep the occupier, the armies of the occupier, which is you who consent to go do watch the other prisoners, alert, but without adverse effects. I'm going to have to say, so I haven't done it quite yet, but there's a possibility of another amino acid that'll do that. So might be able to, L-theanine, then I think it is. So consider that when you do your studies on how to more normalize your chemistry in your body. Like I said, I haven't done it yet. I've been looking seriously at something because just in how to do the alternatives of what they're trying to put on us. Anyway, so they have a problem here. In general, it is a serious public health risk. So Kobe fraud is not a health risk because they agreed to it. This is a health risk because it makes the military people not able to actually function the way they're supposed to. But we're going to non-invasively do what? They're going to shock your vagus nerve in a certain way, 25 hertz. The device that they use passes a non-invasive electric current pulse at 25 hertz through the skin to the nerve via two electrodes placed over the neck. It's a handheld device. And let me offer that you can now see the justification for Taser. It's non-invasive. Well, I don't know about this invasion of the current, but they don't consider that invasive. So now we also see in this article how they will, what they've defined what invasive is and what invasive is. I think putting it on my neck, anything close to me would be invasive. But they can even touch you here, and it's non-invasive. And you have to understand this because we're going to get to the next point about they're doing this on something that protects their military people to do a better function on what they want, the occupier wants. The military is supposed to be serving the American people. Those people don't know they've been born into a prison. And so they're doing, I found this fascinating that they've figured out they can rectify this problem of sustained wakefulness without the side effects. And so that's what I was saying in the beginning, is this going to substitute for coffee or energy drinks and all that other stuff, which apparently is a serious problem. And anything you look at, if you look at those ingredients, they really are. So I just want you to focus here on this one. It's non-invasive for them to put up a taser to your neck and in this case, shoot you in the neck to do something particular. See, in a taser, the only difference in a taser is that they need to incapacitate you. In this case, they're capacitating you for a certain reason, but they're injecting 25 hertz signals. So those of you that want to play with this and have a TENS machine or want to make a machine, you can do this. Consider the frequency. And I don't know what the voltage is. You might want to go check that out. It may not take much. To stimulate a nerve, which then resets your brain a bit. And all of a sudden, you're doing pretty good. Let me move on from the fact that they can touch you, and that's not invasive, and that we're dealing with frequency and electricity to stimulate things. And remember what I've talked about the last few weeks as we moved this kind of naturally into how this is all working from I still haven't figured out if it's a parlor trick, magnets on your injection site, and I started looking into all that, and we started to figure out the phased arrays, antenna systems that could be going on, the fact that some of these systems are set in one spot, but then the components of which move to others to do other type of systems, and focus, concentrate their components in certain areas, one of which particularly is the brain. One of which we find out is addressable if underneath the brain fog idea, that if you have an injection and you have brain fog, you really need to go investigate and or get a prescription for what was that, fluvoxamine? It's the SSRI that goes through the blood-brain barrier and destroys whatever they're doing in the brain. I don't think ivermectin works at that point anymore. You need to go look at that. Don't take it longer than you would an antibiotic, though, so you don't have to deal with the SSRI effects. But there's something going on that can pass the blood-brain barrier is said to get rid of a symptom. That brain fog wasn't a symptom of COVID-19, was it? No. So they're injecting you with something new, causing you something new. And so keep up. You got to keep up with what's going on. Don't be like we're talking about hydroxychloroquine, when they did that magical shift. But then they moved from that into ivermectin. That seemed to hold. Lots of studies seemed to hold that one real well. And then they move into this other one after injection that helps eliminate brain fog after injection, which ivermectin cannot. You got to keep up with what you're hearing they're doing. So here we have, they found out that they can stimulate you, and it's almost acts like coffee might, with no side effects, apparently. It only takes about, 6 minutes, they say, to do this. It's electrical stimulation. Non-invasive contact non-invasive, oxymorons here, stimulation to get you to do something different. Moving on. New Air Force weapon can take out hundreds of drones instantly and silently. Okay. Where are we going here? Keep a general thought about this. The U.S. Air Force unveiled a weapon this month designed to take out hundreds of drones at once with barely a sound. Apparently, it's the electronic fly swatter that I've been telling you we're going to need in the future to get rid of all these flying bugs, mosquitoes that we think are actually natural. The Tactical High Power Operational Responder, or THOR, some of you will appreciate that, THOR uses a beam of energy to scramble the electronics inside hundreds of drones at once. That caught my attention. Hundreds of drones at once. This unique system allows base defense forces to stop, in brackets, unarmed aerial system attacks at large, long range before they threaten critical infrastructure. Increasingly sophisticated drones are becoming more threatening in the hands of enemy militaries as attack and surveillance capabilities grow, the Air Force said in the video. THOR is more effective than small arms and more efficient than heavy arms, which are currently used against drones. When THOR identifies a target, it shoots a beam of microwaves in less than a second, providing an instant effect on the drones. The system is different from a laser, which shoots a beam capable of destroying one drone, according to the Air Force. Instead, THOR's utilization of high-powered microwave allows it to scuttle swarms of unarmed aerial systems. THOR completely stows in a 20-foot ship container, which can be transported in a C-130. How about if fired from a C-130? Or anything else? The system can be set up as two people within 3 hours and operates from ground power. The first prototype was unveiled in 2019 in New Mexico. It costs about $15 million to develop, and each system costs $10 million to produce. Some of the bases have taken these steps to defend themselves from drones, while THOR is still in the prototype stage. Enough there. Let's go back. What about the drones on the ground, made so by an injection, that creates a phased array antenna system, which can be targeted by microwave beams from 5G and their phased array systems after they find you from your phone or your device in your house, your smart refrigerator you just grabbed a drink from. And it can do lots of drones. It can take care of lots of you drones that got injected. Maybe even without injection. And they can do it without touching you. They're talking about aerial drones. When I saw the word drones, I said, anybody who's getting a vaccine's got to be a drone. And they're improving those drones. And they look at them as the weapons of the enemy. They're turning them on them. They're turning the enemy on itself. They can change you. They can change something about you by non-invasive, they claim, stimulation at 25 hertz. Here, they say they can scramble electronics at a distance. Well, that's not much more different than the EMP, I think, that Lockheed developed in a missile that I told you about a long time ago. They can fly along and act as if it's an EMP weapon, targeting specific computers and devices inside a building. This is it. This is what they're doing. Only I'm going to expand the drone to be the human enemy in an urban environment, that eventually 5G will be able to work to do whatever they want. They're going to reprogram people to be more alert, to fall asleep, to be dead, to be whacked. And we're asking for it. I don't know more. I don't know how much more clear it can be what they're telling us in the news, what's going on, and what the capabilities are. And if they're not like this, then why are we looking at the world that we're looking at? And yet, that world is exactly what the people have asked for. And it could be exactly what the people ask for. In other words, demand. And I've offered quite a few, over the years, quite a few instances of us taking a notice of examples that would have worked on how that should have been done. And yet, how it's there to do, we're explained how history says we should do it. We see the examples of even people. I don't trust some of these people. A lot of these people. I've told you the Constitution of the United States was this adulteration of what was supposed to happen. Article 6 tells you that. And in there is an outstanding debt. If you're a debtor nation, you'd have no rights as a nation, internationally. Everybody knows this silently. Anyway, stop. I've already talked about all that. We're here today. We're here today with the occupiers that probably came from this in order to keep control of the thing that was really never created that the people were acknowledged to have in them if they wanted it. And apparently they don't. And COVID-19, to my dismay, has proved that again. Again, as I've been saying. And then we get this out of a military guy. And this is the problem with this cancel culture. When you're a military guy, I don't know how much more I want to talk about this stuff because partly I don't understand what they're talking about. It's all made up nonsensical stuff that is created by people without respect for themselves, without respect for others, and probably abused people. Whether that was done chemically or just the degradation of society, as I said, when we saw the society turning into the abortion, it was going to be. We're dealing with the products of this now. And a lot of us, I don't have a problem, I have a problem with not doing it, but I understand, I guess I should say, why people just back off and don't want to engage it. I get that. I get it. But it turns out every time we do that more, like what's happened, we asserted something back against the Forest Service. We've been in relative peace for 10 years. There's been a change of regime in the sheriff who then, coincidental to our trespass, was a county that then started re-engage the Forest Service with a contract to do the patrolling in the Forest Service. I'm not saying that the new deputies patrolling the forest are the ones that are the problem. What it showed was the new sheriff in town was amenable to the aggressions of the Forest Service itself that was stopped by the previous sheriff. And so we're now engaged again, coincidental to that agreement, as if the sheriff is now bought. He's just hands off. He realizes what the law is. He doesn't want to deal with it. It'll take care of itself, and it would until the Forest Service or any other, the BLM or any of the other federal agents start coming under the color of a law that they can't, that is not available to them, and that there's no way to arrest it, essentially. But for the most strong records, and what's the remedy there? The remedy there is when you make the strong administrative record, then you can stop what I told you before. This record is to stop liabilities, provide defenses ahead of the time you need them. When they start to go rogue on you, and you know you're walking into jurisdictions that aren't justice. They're injustice. They're not injustice, they're injustice. You get how close this language starts to work. Anyway, here's critical race theory. Part of me doesn't even get this stuff. It just does not compute at all. To me, again, these are academics looking for something to do, and they give insult to people, and people take it because they have no value in their life, and so they're going to make people's life miserable because they think that gives value in their life. But anyway, this is a military guy saying this. Is critical race theory okay for the U.S. military? Be open-minded and widely read, says top general. Quote, I want to understand white rage, and I'm white. This is a military guy. And this is the problem with something called, entitled, critical race theory. And I haven't even gauged it. It's so ridiculous what's been offered and accepted by this white guy. It doesn't think that's a racist problem to begin with. And then imposes that on the whole of society, the whole of a military institution, is the problem with race, what ends up being racist, critical race theory. So I'll stop there. But this story, it's very short, is the problem with critical race theory. This guy doesn't have the responsibility in himself to not insult everybody else and consider that white rage may not be in everybody, whatever that is on top of it. However fraudulently constructed, that hasn't been interrogated. He accepts it. It's the problem with this stuff. I want to understand white rage, and I'm white. Well, good. Okay, if it's there and it's something for you, great. But this is a military guy who's looking at you. The same guys that's running the microwave system, that's doing the surveillance, that's doing warp speed, an injection that's a fraud, software of life, experiment on mankind and womankind, both of you, and your babies, most importantly. So he's in white rage and he's white. Okay, fine. What kind of nonsense statement is that anyway? General Mark Milley, chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, made a staunch defense of having military that is well-educated and well-read on diverse topics, including critical race theory. It's not really a theory. It's a weapon. Milley made strong comments on the need to understand what moves American society. Boy, true injustice would. Why don't they come listen to Behind the Woodshed? We'll talk about what injustice in society is when you're attacking your own production, when you give no remedy to your producer class, which is pretty much everybody that manufactures something, not just the raw materials people. Why don't you go look at that? When Vilsack in the Department of Agriculture comes out and says, you farmers, you are politically inert to us. That was the last time he was in office. He's in it again after Trump. Why don't we go look at that racism? At the disrespect of the people that keep a food on your table, that feed your military people. No, well, we're going to do this esoteric idea that doesn't really have a function at all but to cause division. And you have to assume that in yourself. You have to assume that division in order to even think about this stuff. That's the problem with critical race theory. It is racist. Anyway, going on. What he said. What is it that caused thousands of people to assault this building and try to overthrow the Constitution of the United States of America? He asked in a House Armed Services Committee hearing June 23rd. Is the problem with critical race theory? He destroys the Constitution in the statement. And I don't know what more to say about that. I told you the military was behind the destruction. The House of Representatives is behind it, supporting the destruction when they took an oath to the democracy. Remember, I talked about all this. Anyway, this little paragraph just screamed, the problem with critical race theory is what he just said. And it's how it contorts reality. It's how it denies rights to people. And it's not in rage. It wasn't rage in the Constitution that the people had the right to alter and abolish a government as they saw fit when they saw maladministration. Am I liking how that worked out? I've told you I didn't. I've told you I thought there was a better way, and I said I hope they did it that way. And we didn't choose it because we're children so far. But does that make rage? And what's the insult to the people I saw there? As you see, they contort what was going on to justify the occupiers' mistreatment of the Gulag gang, not given any air. Nobody there knows how to file a habeas as well. Or their friends, thousands and thousands in the court there, filed and keep filing. No, nobody knows how to do this. Because critical race theory has the answer, is the problem with critical race theory. It's the problem with this military guy, and it's your problem. Again, part of me doesn't even want to talk more about it. I can't talk about it. This is a fabricated, divisive thing invented for us to pay attention to. This guy should resign. He took an oath to uphold the Constitution and says people are race, has white rage because they felt that their government was not fulfilling its obligations under that same Constitution. It is the problem with all this. And so until we have a people that will start getting to the core of what's going on and eschew all this nonsense, and do it more properly because you see how they're closing the doors on everything. You're defined. I've told you this before. You're going to be defined as something unless you have a better word in your mouth and a better place to show and a more objective authority, which is that black and white, to do what you're doing and lead with that. Don't let it lag. When I'm dealing like with this Forest Service thing, we're not moving until we got our paperwork set up. And then we're going to move within the constraint of the narrow path set up for that so that we aren't, if we're attacked, we have defenses and remedies which objectively will help protect us. And as I said, it's not one, it's a number of fallback positions, given we are dealing with rogue countries, a rogue nation, a rogue foreign government, which is the United States government, which this guy has taken an oath to, not you, but to that entity back there in Washington, D.C., who looks at what happened in Congress, the People's House, as a rage instead of a right. I'm moving on. Johnson & Johnson pays $230 million to settle a New York opioids case. And again, thank you, Sound Minds, for this stuff. I wouldn't find some of these things out there. And just to touch base, here they are, Johnson & Johnson, their so-called, their injection, their serum, their potential drone serum for future control, drone control, pays $230 million to settle the opioids case, is a company that's also providing you with the injection. And they only had to pay $230 million. As I told you before, like Monsanto, there's so much money involved. This is just the cost of doing business, and it's not a large cost. Johnson & Johnson has reached a $230 million agreement to settle an opioid lawsuit brought by the Attorney General of New York State. The opioid epidemic has wreaked havoc on countless communities across New York State and the rest of the nation, leaving millions of still addicted, dangerous, and deadly opioids, the New York Attorney General Letitia James said in a press release. Johnson & Johnson helped fuel this fire, but today they're committing to leaving the opioid business, not only in New York, but across the entire company. So good for them, I suppose. I had a friend who was on heroin. He talked to him. Great guy. Great guy. He's not with us anymore. But he survived all that stuff long before. He says that's the toughest stuff to deal with he's ever dealt with. It was really remarkable just to listen to what he had to go through to still be alive when I was talking to him at the time. And so this is a real problem. But this is just they don't look at the underlying where they're going after Johnson & Johnson on this and all these years, and then they settle and they don't even accept liability if you read the story. They're not going to accept liability. They only helped. And now that they know, this is how this works in this country. Now that they've been given their first notice, it's really, really, really a problem. I mean, really a problem now. They're just going to stop doing it to the tune of $230 million, which goes into like a general fund somehow. This isn't going to go very far, obviously. But this is the government that goes on. And this is inside the tax system that goes on. This is all part of how they continue to go on and do it. And this company is now known to get another thing it's done that was violative of people. That they didn't have the sense. The people inside, see, the Johnson & Johnson is just this figure piece of paper. The people inside didn't have the sense, the respect in people, to not do this ahead of time. Just like they don't have the respect in people to tell you that what they're doing is an experiment against mankind because there's somehow a dollar. As Brett Weinstein said in that interview with the three-point people interview that I was talking to you about, he said billions can destroy trillions in this country. One of the major problems he sees with this country, of many things. Billions, B, can destroy T, trillions. And his example was this thing with COVID and the billions paid to these companies to make these vaccines that they wanted, so-called vaccines, these drone treatments, put into existence, have destroyed trillions of dollars of value. And very astute. I didn't, sometimes I don't look at certain things. He looked at that. I thought that was an astute observation. In this country, United States, we're free to destroy value. It only takes a few people and a few dollars to do so. And part of that is because that system is a, if you will, the fiat system, like Perks and Mirrors. Oh, fiat. Yeah. We do lots of fiat stuff. And we continue to do it. And we have every choice to not. And so what do they do? So the perception management allows them to gauge whether you are or whether you're not. They know you by your deeds, folks. I can just tell you that. And they know you better than yourself. And you can be talking and vociferating how much you don't like anything, as long as you keep eating from the trough in any kind of way, or you don't really reject it outright and destroy the trough. They got you. They got everybody. And then it gets down to like where we are, the mining claim. It's one-on-one. It's us against them. And there's a lot of them. And that's part of looking out and saying, okay, how do I... I've got a freight train full of tyranny here. How am I going to deal with all that in a way I can deal with it? I'm only one guy. As far as our legal work, I do that part. So, anyway, Johnson pays some more for the opioids. Good for them. To me, I don't know. If you need them, if that could be used for good, then we need that. But you know how the government mucks stuff up, and it becomes the things where let's make billions so we can destroy trillions. In this case, let's make billions so we can destroy the population in some regard until we get caught. And then we won't take liability. We'll go do it again. And the government was okay with that. And I don't know if that anybody was okay privately, but that's the way the law works, if you will. All you guys will say legal. Yeah, that's the way it works. You really have to take this into consideration, what we're up into. Secret doctor revealed Moderna sent coronavirus vaccine to North Carolina University weeks before pandemic. And so this is another one of those stories. They're talking to you about COVID pandemic. They don't denounce it in the story. But we hear a little bit more coming out. A confidential agreement shows potential coronavirus vaccine candidates were transferred from Moderna to the University of North Carolina in 2019, 19 days prior to the official emergence of a COVID vaccine pandemic. And so we see, it was, again, the setup for the takedown. It was all in the works. Everyone was agreeing to it. Academia is involved. Public-private partnerships. Your university system is the forefront of the agencies to bring this forward. All these concepts forward, such things as critical race theory, now adopted by the co-working partner of the military, and now presented to the public in a two-year lawmaker, so-called, as a question. I mean, I'm interested in all kinds of stuff, which don't rise to an official capacity. If this guy spoke that, is the problem with that theory. It's already in your system. It's already conditioning your system. And look what they're promoting in that military system. And I have again, as I've asked before, Epstein whacked McAfee, changed my mind. I have said on this broadcast and explained why, through people that I admired even, the friends that I worked with, who told me that this condition that we are watching and having to endure is a condition that's brought on by abuse in some way. And so we're having to deal, without having any real remedy for it, for people who are imposing their abuse, have they lived through their abuse and imposed it on you because they have no respect in themselves to say, I can't let this out to somewhere. It's like that abusive system. When you get abused, you put that on the people that you love, so to say. This is the way society, the official stance of society is this abuse. And I have I start thinking about it, I get very sad that there's a lot of hurt people in this country. But that doesn't give them the right to bring up in any sort of actual capacity in a general application that their view of the world can be imposed upon people generally. And that's what we're seeing. That's a violation of everybody else. We can read more about this, but the point on this is it was in the war, all these so-called vaccines, these serums of these genetic treatments, these really for cancer treatments, admitted to by the guy that created the mRNA. I think the guy's name was Malone. He was the one guy in that interview, that one with Brett Weinstein. He admitted to all this as well. that these are not, so as an ethicist now, he's not up with it. And so we're still seeing now the ramifications of everybody not talking about it, as far as, actually defending themselves against this very same thing. Another thing for the fact of its, what we call premeditated application, if you will, for the fraud. The writing's on the wall that this was given the green light a long time before. Why wouldn't it? The CDC invented this thing in 2003 and then took jealous possession of something even the patent office says you can't have. And the government, the United States government's a big military. So guess what? Who wins in the world? Law or the biggest brute? The biggest gorilla? Hundreds of vaccinated Indonesians. So all this testing goes on. The university system's involved. I've told you over and over how this all works. University system is an agency of your state government. If you look closely, in most places I've noticed, like your bar association. Those are both, they'll claim those are private. The bar association is. So you're watching the writing on the wall of the overthrow of your country, even if it wasn't a military occupier that you noticed that was happening in Lincoln's time. I've said there's many types of occupations. There's many ideologies being brought forward through those occupations. I only touch few that seem to make the news and just hope people will get involved. And over time, the listenership just completely dives. There really is no responsibility of people to protect themselves. I'd rather wish we would step up, because this is, I guess, an ongoing disappointment that I told you I saw with the people tried to destroy the Jefferson Mining District. When we had a force to be reckoned with, it was infiltrated, and it was they tried to destroy it. It still has a small group of people that keep it going. But I still wonder whether 200 to 500, because it started with 200, there's thousands and thousands of mineral state grantees that could have joined once we got more organized to get bigger, why the district is as large as it is. Because each one of those grantees function as a private man or woman where they are, with the same rights as the district, since they're the assembly of the district. The power that was walked away from with this was just a stunning breach. If the idea is people in this country, the United States of America, are free, or even think themselves to be free, with property, and prevailingly so, even exclusive possession, even against the government, which the law says, which is not enjoyed by most people, and partly because I watch people walk away from their responsibility. And so that's the sadness is going to be befalling all of the country, and COVID kind of rang the bell again for them. Hundreds of vaccinated Indonesian health workers get COVID-19. You think they told us that it was? Why is that even news? But there it is. You want COVID-19? Jabdemic, folks. You want to get the symptoms? You want to get beyond the symptoms? They're saying what? Sterilization? They didn't say the symptoms of sterilization. They didn't say the symptoms of brain fog, but that's what people getting these serums are experiencing. The exasperation of underlying pre-existing problems? The susceptibility to future problems? More than 350 healthcare workers have become infected with COVID-19. Infected with symptoms. They're not infected with symptoms, folks. This is all the lie again. In Indonesia, I really stutter quite a bit anymore. And dozens hospitalized despite being vaccinated with China's Sinovac shot. Global serums, folks. Bade Ismoyo, head of the Kudus District Health Office in Central Java, said that most of the health workers were asymptomatic and self-isolating at home. But still, dozens were in the hospital with high fevers and declining oxygen saturation levels. The outbreak. Let's get us back to the law here, folks. The outbreak. Remember, that's the first step. Identifying the communicable disease, both the infectious agent and its spite symptoms. Initiates somewhere, that's called an outbreak. If it breaks out of that localized area in a district of whatever the government decides the district size is, For us in the United States of America, it's counties. It becomes an epidemic. It never goes beyond an epidemic. Only the WHO has fabricated what a pandemic is. And I've told you that they've changed that definition. You likely won't find it unless you find some old information. And I told you it was one DNA unit giving it a communicable disease to a second DNA unit that is existent in two regions of the world. And I told you that when I looked at that and understand more how to interpret what you're reading, when a doctor with a DNA unit injects the victim another DNA unit, and they do that in two different regions of the WHO regions, of WHO will determine that the pandemic is not a pandemic. It's the evidence of the application of crime against humanity, if I can use the term. Because that's where everyone's stuck. Everyone's a human animal. And so, outbreak. The outbreak occurred. So, boom, it opens up. That's an interesting and good statement. So, they got a health official on it. The cause is the shot, right? The jabdemic is caused by the shot. Is that surprising? No, that was in their paperwork, if anybody would have looked. And who would want to get that if they didn't have it? Get the disease that nobody knew they had. What is this? And we agree to that. So, something, I don't really remember how I got here. I noticed something in some searching I was doing. And I come up with a bunch of links. And I want to go through some of this to explain possibly what might be underlying. Remember, we have this, what do you call it? This gene therapy has an ability to co-opt your system to create the synthetic proteins, they tell us. That's not the only thing they can do, which they claim will cause an immune response and all that stuff. But in fact, it is co-opting the cell, which they say that it doesn't do, but it has to when you understand it. And that it exacerbates underlying comorbidities or things, latent things that you may be able to live with and don't know. I ran across this very interesting thing. And again, because I'm not actually trained in this and I have to find out the hard way and I have to be alert and aware and I have to do the research until I stumble over something. And then I hope that I put it together correctly. This came just square, it hit me right in the face when I first saw the discussion about these things. It came up in some forum discussion. Someone made a comment. And I think that's somehow I was looking at something else and this came up. I go, what's this? Because of what they were saying about it. And what they were talking about was mycoplasma infections. What the heck are those? You ever heard of that, folks? Anybody hear about this stuff? Well, pause, let you think about that. Maybe you have. I mean, I didn't. So all these things are new. If I'd have known this early on, we could have been I could be predicting exactly what all this stuff, why the VARS has a list of things that they already know is going to happen. Because I think this might be what's actually starting to kick in, what's they're triggering. Again, remember the I think it was the Malone guy in that interview said this activates latent viruses and conditions in the body. Then I ran across this. Mycoplasma infections. Mycoplasma is a bacteria or germ that can infect different parts of your body. I say that, folks. I want you, all the stuff I missed telling you as I walk through these things with have a bigger discussion. Remember what the effects in the data sheets was saying they were looking for to affect in the injections as they move this experimental thing onto you. Consider, as I'm reading this, what you've heard me say, what you've likely read, if you read any and studied, consider all the places in your body that are affected, all the systems that are affected, and you tell me whether or not they're met by a mycoplasma infection. Which body part is affected? Your lungs, skin, urinary tract depends on what type of mycoplasma bacteria is causing your infection. All mycoplasma infections have one thing in common, though. Unlike other bacteria, mycoplasma do not have cell walls. They are also very small compared to other bacteria. That's important because many antibiotics kill bacteria by weakening those walls. Since mycoplasma bacteria don't have them, some antibiotics like penicillin won't work against them. There are about 200 types of mycoplasma bacteria, but most of them are harmless. The ones you may have to worry about are the pneumonia, genitalium, the homonas, the urea, lyticum, and parvum. Of 200, they give you a list of a few here. And then they go through and they talk about mycoplasma pneumonia, and they explain it. And they talk about it. It presents itself as chest colds. It's called walking pneumonia. And you see, again, let's look at what COVID-19 was doing. They said it's pneumonia-like symptoms. They were actually talking about how it exacerbates how that supposed infectious agent they called SARS-CoV-2 actually created this condition. Number one that they talk about on this for a mycoplasma infection is pneumonia. Who would have thunk it? Something that you don't really know about, you have. All right, I don't want to read the rest. They go through a lot of information on how they fight this. You're going to find the very first one is one of the first things that they do to fight that infection is using azithromycin, which is what the French doctor was using in correlation with the hydrochloroquine. And so if you looked at this more as mycoplasma infection, if you just hit the one that hit your lungs, the answer was it already an existing antibiotic. And there's a couple more. My focus on this thing is the comorbidities condition and the exacerbation of underlying infections that we live with and may not know about. And then I think this came also, I can't remember how I got some of these links. Anyway, trying to pull this information about another hit piece on ivermectin in the land of COVID censorship madness is another link that I was looking at. Despite no evidence of efficacy in the treatment of COVID-19, an Illinois judge has ordered the hospital to give ivermectin to a comatose patient with few options left. Now, if this thing is not the virus, and there is no efficacy, and there is no test, and there is no known risk, and there is no answer, why does this hit piece article, a hit piece itself against ivermectin, not believe that a judge would say, well, since the medical license can issue ivermectin an off-label as long as there's no risk and you have no other answers, you can't stop that doctor from doing that. Why is that a problem with this article? To show you the perception management that goes against the idea that using chemistry off-label could possibly work. What's the problem? Especially when the doctors, if you start noticing, they didn't say it. What if they're understanding the actual symptoms are looking like a bacterial infection, not a virus, not SARS-CoV-2? And why, maybe, how these antiparasitics may work. Remember, no cell wall, it's more looking like a chemical package again as well, isn't it? We're looking at a chemical weapon. We're looking at an underlying condition that's in our body all the time that the body fights in stasis. Your immune system needs to be up, and when it is, it keeps it in check. We're a body of bacteria, and it all works together as long as it's working together. Mycoplasma, another story here. The number one Lyme co-infection. How to outsmart it. And so now I see as I'm looking through this, I'm noticing there's ways to address it. When you finally notice you have an infection that you didn't really notice, they're just symptoms, you live with them. Again, you live in the prison that you're built into. You don't know the difference. Mycoplasma is the stealthiest of all stealth microbes. It may be a major player in many chronic diseases associated with aging, but remarkably, most people, including most doctors, have limited awareness of it. Again, I mean, reading all this stuff, there's so much information to start exposing what's going on. And I always ask the question, what about those researchers or doctors that do know about it and they become the ones that do perception management? Oh, look everywhere else except here, will you please? Because if you understand we're exacerbating an underlying thing, an infection you don't know you have, you might be able to stop it. I didn't realize anything. I don't have Lyme's disease that I know of. I don't think I have anything that they're deleterious at all. So I'm not looking. I do have a few things, like I say, allergies. Now I'm starting to realize, well, maybe it's an infection I didn't realize I haven't quite got to yet. Because they're that stealthy and they're that vigorous. They're able to adapt. Because why? They're chemistry. They're not adapting at all. They're just a chemistry that's able to adjust itself. Then listen to this. This is, again, just fascinating clues here. If we just do crumbs going through a game, I guess. Mycoplasma is a parasite, meaning it can't live without a host. And it's the smallest bacteria. 4,000 of them can fit inside a single red blood cell in your body. By comparison, only 10 to 15 average-sized bacteria would fit in the same cell. Unlike other bacteria. And remember, I've always told you, look out for the things you're told that are a one-off. Here's this is it. This is one of those things. Unlike other bacteria, mycoplasmas don't have a protective cell wall, creating an interesting survival strategy. They can shape-shift and fit into areas where other bacteria can't go. Pornhub? Trumpy. What's going on in the chat? Not listening to me. They can shape-shift and fit in areas where other bacteria can't go. Stealthy and can go places no one else can go. Interesting. For example, it also allows them to slip inside cells of the host. The lack of cell wall makes mycoplasma resistant to some commonly prescribed classes of antibiotics like penicillin, which normally work by interrupting the bacteria's cell wall so that when the bacteria divides, it falls apart. There are at least 23 different varieties of mycoplasma that can infect humans. A few of them are considered harmless normiflora, but most of them have potential to cause disease. Now, they go through how it spreads. Just interacting. Fleas, ticks, biting flies, sexual contact, contaminated food, airborne droplets. Is that what they knew they were trying to stop? Instead of telling us about it? Because see, the virus couldn't be stopped by a mask, right? Anyway, keep the clues coming together. It just keeps falling together as I read this. It goes on, and mycoplasma is a master at manipulating and outmaneuvering the host's immune system. Immunomodulation problems, folks? Jabdemic? Causation? Half of its genetic makeup is devoted to that purpose. Whether it has a little ability to cause direct harm, it can use the host's immune function to do its advantage. Little opportunist. Mycoplasma generates a chronic low-grade inflammation and steals vital nutrients from the body. Let me stop there. Why is that important? A low-grade infection that you just live with, you may not even know it's there, and it taps your energy, and it causes your system to fight it, would do what to your immune system relative to the PCR test? Wouldn't that likely throw a positive? Okay, the answer is kind of a trick question. That would depend on how many cycles, isn't it? First of all, would they use a PCR, and then how many cycles, correct? And so we've got to put our thinking hat on. It's not all I'm saying, this is it. You have to go through, there's going to be a reason how it's going to throw a positive. And you got to kind of look at that. So I brought up just a link to a DuckDuckGo search. I just wanted to see. Are they using PCR to test for these? And then how many cycles they use? And guess what? You put mycoplasma PCR test cycle in a DuckDuckGo, and I've got that. I'll have that as a link. And the very first thing that came up on my search was Easy PCR, Mycoplasma Detection Kit. And you read through there, and you find out they do about 49 cycles. At that point, they can find anything, folks. They can find any infection in your body because it doesn't check for any particular. It looks for the response. Remember, there is no test. And unless they have the identical, they know exactly what you're being done. They use. They don't know what they're after. It's just a generic test. Once they can identify specifically what you have, then that becomes a research tool that Kerry Mullis was telling you they can use, but in a research setting, not a clinical setting. But sure enough, you look and I put in a mycoplasma PCR test and cycle just to find out. It's the first thing they use, and they use a high cycle count. Completely useless for clinicals, but they can tell you that you have an infection. Once they're on the dog on the hunt on mycoplasma, they certainly are not us SARS-CoV-2, are they? Now it makes sense if you could find out that you have that low-grade infection going on. Why? Because you have an infection. Why is that important? Because nowadays, with the jabdemic and the ability to acquire something from somebody, this thing that you might get may go after that low-grade infection that's invisible to you and inflame it into something. One of which would be pneumonia, another of which would be the immunological problems. The ability, which gets into the rheumatism and the arthritis type stuff and the bone marrow, which they did say happens with that interview. And so I'm really interested in this. What we may be looking at is this mycoplasma infection that's exacerbated by that is a parasite, that is exacerbated by the jabdemic, which is why ivermectin can work. It's a parasite. And it can work if you get in quickly. And if you get the jabdemic serum, that's why you have to shift to the thing that can breach the blood-brain barrier to do the same thing, to take out what the fluvoxamine will do in your brain. When this thing is so small, it can get into places in your body, like the brain. It also answers better than aluminum in the injection, I think. And so, that's my thoughts. I think, and why do we do that? Because we want to be able to go the route we need to go. We need to go where we need to go, not be persuaded into places. If you can figure out you have a low-grade infection, it'd be better that you solve that than to just buy into the fact of a gene therapy, untargeted. That I'm hearing now, even people with cancer are getting this thing. Why would, as an oncology patient, why would you get an untargeted gene therapy for your cancer because you have the cancer? It blows me away. The fear level here has to be immense in people. I don't want to trivialize that. People are motivated. It's fear, flight, or fight, folks. I guess so far I've been a fighter. Not to exalt it. I'm just that. That's not such a good thing in the face of a overwhelming force to be a fighter. Okay, so maybe not. Maybe I'm not 100%. Fighting fire has taught me how to, you end up having to assess your validity of you against the foe pretty quickly. So I know I can run. I can take a new position. So I know I'm not just, okay, I'm going to win at all costs. But fight or flight, there is a giant fear in this country. I don't know where it's come from. I don't know why people have got so scaredy cat. But here we are. Here we are. And mycoplasma infection, 200 different ones that normally the flora of which are nothing, can be exacerbated. The exact thing this jabdemic serum does, this gene therapy does, co-opting your system. I would ask you here, folks, to me, this looked like the most valid thing. Why ivermectin worked? Why chloroquine worked? Hydroxychloroquine could work. That shift, again, we were doing some study. I got to maybe get to there here. Why that would all work? Because it's deemed a parasite and not a virus. And why an antiparasitic would work? Answers to me the question I've had. How is this even working? It's because we're not dealing with SARS-CoV-2 or whatever the heck you want to call it. The invention and property SARS-CoV-1 of the CDC. What a major fraud and misperception that people have about on this fraud. and it may be resolved. Again, that's why your health, having a healthy immune system is important, because your body's handling that underlying infection. But it's diminished, greatly diminished by when you get that injection. My theory, no doctor, you're going to do whatever you feel you need to do, and I'm going to warn you on your fear factor. Don't let it eat you up. Start to get more knowledgeable. Start to understand what's going on. Start understanding the limitations of even the medicines that they're giving you. They're not free of problems. And they have to be taken in time. Like I said, ivermectin may not work after the first week or so, maybe. I don't know. And then only to the amount you have to do it. It can hurt you. All this stuff can hurt you. It's pharmaceutical stuff. Although even herbs, they can hurt you. So, fluvoxamine, after you get the jab, damage, because it goes in the blood-brain barrier. Why? Because they've exacerbated a mycoplasma infection that moved into your brain. It wasn't the aluminum of the shot. It wasn't even the hydrogel. It might have been getting this mycoplasma infection that you didn't know fired up. How many of you know how you have that? How many different ones could there be? As many as 200 different types of all the people, and then the combinations of everybody that you know. We'll affect everybody differently. And so, again, your health is important. Vitamin D, get in the sun, take a supplement. You got zinc, you have vitamin A, all your antioxidants up front. And then look a little bit deeper. You know, fish oil, possibly. It depends on who you are and what you do. Your liver and your kidneys are critical in all this. Keep those up. At any rate, so you can go find this information. It's out there now. The internet's just great somehow. And so, it looks like, if I treat this more like a mycoplasma infection that I didn't understand or didn't know existed, and I know that's a parasite, and they're telling me, I look at all the studies and it says ivermectin, an antiparasitic, works, I'm not dealing with a virus. And so having that knowledge can make all the difference at this point. It also gives you a basis to stand against when you get your letter that says that you aren't the infectious agent and not a risk to the public. You haven't been found to be the risk to the public. That gives you the fact of that you, whatever you're doing, is the alternative to what they're offering. That's a question. And the risk is much higher. And you get to sit inside why that judge said ivermectin was something they could do when they had nothing else to do to show better. They can only show risks and harm. They can show an exacerbation of something they don't know is in you, and you don't know what that's going to be to keep you from that. A study of mycoplasma infection may offer you another observation to ask, did you check for that? And if you didn't check it in me, how do you know? Now, what are you doing to me? We're now into disclosure. You're not into standing there with like a grouper with your mouth breathing like some fish out of water. And I'm not saying this, you offer this up front. You step into it and you only give what you need, but you are confident in what you're going to assert. We're going to now move from into what this military thing does in the country, how it divides us, as we've talked a couple times, the division that goes on. Moving into now what's going on in the government, why we've got to start keeping ahead of it, what the court cases are talking to, where they fail, where attorneys fail, as I move a couple more tabs down. Team Biden asks Americans to report radicalized friends and family. This is, again, not new news. This is what was coming. This has been on the books since 9/11. As I told you, I told you they were going to do this in Operation Hindsight 2020 to reinvoke all the fear in you, even if you don't think you have any. Someone next to you does, to the tune of 3/4 against you, only 1/4 around you. If there's 4 people standing around, 3 of you are going to be against 1 of you. That's you. So understand this problem. And yet, we have people that are hurt, are hurting, abused, and responding through that. And societally, it's not even about COVID either. I mean, this is, again, critical race theory. It's just the invocation of nonsense. It's a disrespect to anybody who isn't into that. It's a disrespect to say that, oh, you're into it because you didn't think about it. No, these people don't have any respect in themselves to have any respect in you. You can't let that keep going. And yet, I've told you, this is not handled head on. You're never going to scream back at cancel culture and win. if that's an example, that's what I've been telling you about how you address the government as well. It's its own cancel culture. They're canceling you. They're canceling your property, your rights, everything. They've canceled your remedies. And so we only have things, certain things that we can do to set ourselves up to give ourselves the better position. Team Biden asks Americans to report radicalized friends and family. Sounds just like some Soviet country, right? We've talked about this over and over again. Joe Biden's administration announced their plans to create ways for Americans to report radicalized free friends and family to government in an effort to fight domestic terrorism. What they put in is white rage now. It's got a color. Not just dissatisfaction. Here we go. With government, because it's maladministered. No, no, we can't do that no more. You all are controlled prisoners. You don't have that right. And so this is just what? Is this Biden's regime? No. This is Team Biden? No. This is the government with a new name doing see something, say something. You tattletales. You prisoners. You terrorists and don't know it. You privileged white rage people, no matter what you are. You folks who think you have a constitutional right. You think that's a privilege, folks? See what they've done there, too? And interestingly, international law steps in. A foreign leader steps up. Whatever you think about them, and I'm not embracing, I just said Soviet, right? I'm not embracing what they're doing. I just find it interesting how a foreign country is more honorable to step up and do more truthful observations than any others. And it happens to be in a place that those of us that agree in freedom, you know, this American way, so to say, do not agree at all. And yet this guy becomes the beacon of understanding is really another type of an attack. Putin condemns political persecution of January 6 protesters. Did you order the assassination of Ashley Babbitt? He asks. Now, someone outside the country looks in and does not agree with that military guy. This is a question of white rage. Russian President Vladimir Putin spoke out against the mass arrest of January 6th Capitol protesters and questioned who ordered the assassination of an unarmed Air Force veteran. You think, you know, you're used up until you can be assassinated, you veterans, and I have no disrespect for what you did. I'm critical of that we continue, despite the oaths, to allow this nonsense and allow the gulag gang to sit there in that gulag in the United States of America. And don't go after these people that are still operating under the military that say, oh, this is white rage and not a constitutional right. That the officials that they are coming in to talk to were swearing their oath to democracy. Not even the Constitution, which I will agree was a fallen document. And the Declaration of Independence is an example of what people must do to begin to break those shackles. And the best we can do is to pick folks that were inside that at least the words gave us an example that we can rely on, that we can just say, okay, this is what we're going to put ourselves by this, by some of the principles this guy said. We don't even have an integrated whole man or woman in an understood capacity that we can actually rely on. And so we just grasp at those that may give us the longest run trying to keep the example of what we ought to have been. The Russian president is asking who ordered the assassination. That's an interesting statement. When asked whether or not he ordered the assassination of Alexei Navalny, Putin said, quote, of course not. We don't have this kind of habit of assassinating anybody. That's one. Number two, I want you to ask, did you order the assassination of the woman who walked in the Congress and who was shot and killed by a policeman? Putin said. Do you know the 450 individuals were arrested after entering Congress? He continued, and then didn't go there to steal a laptop. They came with political demands. 450 people have been detained. They are looking at jail time between 15 and 25 years, and they came to Congress with political demands. Isn't that persecution for political opinions? Well, based on what the Joint Chiefs of Staff guy says, no, that's only white rage. Because we're ruled by critical race theory. And I find it astonishing, shocking, I don't know what the words are. I really do not have the adjectives anymore. That someone from a foreign country, and I know why he says this, the hypocrisy. But how clear is that? Where is the people here saying that? And I don't mean just talking. Where's your habeas corpus? Where is the outrage? You want to be white rage? Where is your outrage? You don't have a color here. But the white ends up being the non-colored citizen prisoners, if you understand what's going on here. If you look very carefully and redefine what that was said, white rage is that constitutional response that the government put down again, a la Lincoln. And we're going to continue that perception management by putting a pall all over, by words and in words, over that attempt. However ham-handed it was still ham-handed, still within the right, as they saw fit. And I don't, again, I keep thinking, everything, I've seen videos, they were being invited in, these people. Great, that's the way that should, that's America. But then to have what happen, that's total hypocrisy and military control. You saw how long that happened. But we see why. The military is perception management calling people who have a constitutional right to do a political demand are put in prison, and they're deemed to be functioning under white rage. And this is what I'm telling you about leading with your right in law, and don't let them define how you lead. It's exactly the problem I explained to you all, and those that listened, back then. So, international law, interesting review from somebody, and exactly what it is. So, we don't have the right of a political demand that won't be curtailed and controlled by an occupier under military color, enforcing the problem of Lincoln, the colored people. Remember that our Title 42, Section 1981 says, begins in the middle. It begins with comparing the rights of freed people with those of the white citizen. And those rights of the freed citizen were to pay exactions of every kind. And those of you that don't understand this, have not read it, need to go read it. That's why I don't really accept many people's opinions on a lot of this stuff. Talking, the truth is right where we see it. People may have disappointment that maybe, oh, the Declaration of Independence, I rely on it, but that's just an international document of how we do it. But understand, it was a treaty of peace that destroyed all that. Anyway, there's a whole other example to look at. We are so falling short on that, and that's being exploited against us. That every one of the people who took an oath to democracy in the Congress listening to the Joint Chiefs of Staff guy just nodded their head. Yeah, that's right. White rage. Oh, we're going to be all virtue signaling. And they're all usurpers. Every one of them. I explained all that after that happened. Not to exclude Rand Paul. Okay, Rand Paul. Remember? Moving on. About international interference, interjections, and things that go on. Supreme Court sides with Catholic foster agency that excludes same-sex couples in 9-0 ruling. The Supreme Court cited, again, the Vatican has been on my target, is an advisor to the Holy See in the UN that promotes all this nonsense. And it runs a cover as well to do all the nasty things that it does. It's not immune from any of this. It's just another government. It has its own military. Not new on the subject of this matter for some of you. If you're new to it, thank you very much if you are new about this. This is ongoing. Supreme Court sides with the Catholic foster agency. At some level, you can see why when you see how this place was constructed. You can see 1954, the Pledge of Allegiance was added. They added under God Indivisible, which was added by the Knights of Columbus. And when you find out what God indivisible is, you realize who may be running the place. Underneath. Through where? Article 6. In the construction of this place, under the Treaty of Peace. Another potential occupier. The Supreme Court sided unanimously with the foster care agency in the dispute against the city of Philadelphia over whether it should be banned from participating in the city's foster program because it excluded same-sex couples. The group, Catholic Social Services, claimed that the Philadelphia's attempts to exclude the Catholic Church from foster care violated the First Amendment. Lawyers for the city, meanwhile, said that CSS lacks a constitutional right to demand the DHS offer it a contract that omits the same non-discrimination requirement every other FCC must follow when performing services for the city. In a 9-0 ruling, the justice sided with the Catholic Social Services. Quote, CSS seeks only an accommodation that will allow it to continue serving the children of Philadelphia in a manner consistent with its religious beliefs. It does not seek to impose those beliefs on anyone else. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote in the majority opinion, quote, the refusal of the Philadelphia to contract with CSS for the provision of foster care services, unless it agrees to certify same-sex couples as foster parents, cannot survive strict scrutiny and violates the First Amendment. How much more do you have to accommodate, have yourself accommodated on your right religious beliefs relative to COVID? In your contract, your social contract, that other style of absurdity. Moving on here. Supreme Court sides with, and again, the obviousness of the Catholic Church and what they've been accused of and all the evidence and the problem with that and all the lawsuits regarding the abuse they do to the children, it just kind of washed away in my mind as I was telling you back in 2004 or 5 doing the documentary, which got me locked up, I'm sure, and disappeared that documentary regarding the state's very same social services where they get their contracts from Philadelphia. In this case, it was a different state. And the abhorrent conditions that go on and the judicial cover-up that's going on to allow abuse. And the destruction of families. And the destruction of your way of life. And again, as I also noticed, the tying up of people to fight almost exactly losing battles. Ongoing torment and abuse by the state itself. Under the color of the rights of child, which is again a UN promotion. Anyway, going on. This is not new to me at all. This is not even surprising. I'm just going to continue to tell you, wherever you have a subject matter area that gripes you, you probably have a target-rich environment to be one of those people that can step up and begin the process of rectifying our problem, helping to rectify the problem. A lot of people don't want to do it. I understand that. I'd rather be doing a whole lot of stuff myself. But that's not, again, when I turn around and have to go out and find out that the mining claim's been invaded, they're in my face again. I can't do enough in order to not have to do that and live in peace, just to extract minerals from the ground for all y'all that may want to need them at some point in the future. No, can't do that. We got to be attacked at every, like we always have been and haven't figured that out since at least Lincoln's time. Supreme Court sides with megacorps Nestle and Cargill in child trafficking case. I found this interesting as the dichotomy between the Supreme Court offering that it was okay, that you can't violate someone to make a contract based on their religious beliefs and you have a fundamental right. On this story, it came back to me that, oh, well, look at the child trafficking is allowed by the Supreme Court. I looked into the case and I've read it. And just to bring, I think, a bit, to me, yes, that was an easy target, but I thought I wanted to bring something else here. The court sides of mega corporations. Is that the truth, or was it really more attorney failure? And this is another object lesson on how some of these cases will fail, and why I tell you, be careful on how you go forward. And it starts in your administrative side as well, and making sure you're taking up statuses and you position yourself better. And the positioning of yourself is how you construct how you are amenable to the law. And corporate, I think all y'all are jealous of corporations because under the law, they can be a people too, and they have limited liability that you don't. You have direct liability. And if you understood that, then you created trusts to function instead. And don't do it on my word, but go research how you might do that and how you place them. maybe you won't see the liability, and maybe you can start to at least enjoy a little bit of what the fiction actually gauges that they treat you like anyway. On the other hand, you have flesh and blood. And those of you that start figuring out this distinction and how to keep the separation and how to deal with the two may start to see a little bit of the secret in the meantime of trying to figure out, in the face of no one else wanting to, how we're going to get this place, this ship of state corrected to stop messing around with us and leave us alone and let us actually live in peace. But I wanted to say to this case, though it sounds like, and it, I mean, this is in some regard, this is terrible. The court looked at a case where there's abuse going on in other countries of manufacturing, the things that Cargill and Nestle's and other corporations are involved in. And they came back and they said they dismissed the case against the corporations. Looked pretty bad. But there's a reason. And in a way, you have to look at the reasoning so that you understand that the valid reason puts on an obligation and duty and burden that must be met. And if it's not met, you could be, if it's not met by, particularly against you when the government comes, then they can get at you where you don't have a liability. And so this is the problem with justice. Sometimes it looks as an injustice. It allows an injustice that's really equity should be able to do, but doesn't have, this case isn't without a remedy. It's just not where they filed the case based on the petition that was filed. And so my response to this issue relative to the sending around it, this looks like the corporations were giving carte blanche to do, you know, child trafficking. I said, this seems like a straightforward failure of the attorneys, given the court seems pretty certain that the cases require a petition which, quote, must be defined with a specificity comparable to the three international torts known in 1789, folks, this law. This case turns on international law and respect for international governments and states in dealing with them. And this brings up the Putin comment, all right? So I try to tie all these things together, which seem to come together to talk about. There's reflection in the propriety of things. And so here it goes on, the party that I'm saying and communicating, the part to someone in an email, the party ought to have been given the opportunity to amend. I say that without knowing the record, to saying if the court found that the original court should have come in and said, you will have to dismiss unless you can amend to bring in one of those three torts, as the court will now define and confine this whole thing to. But they do it in an error as well, in my mind, and I'll explain that in a second here. So the party ought to have been given this opportunity to amend. If it's gone there, they should have had the opportunity to bring their complaint in compliance with the three torts, make a cause relative to those three torts. My observation on this, then, is that beyond that, the ongoing question seems to be that Congress said, quote, all causes would be brought on by the government because of a violation to one of its diplomats or its people in the United States. And Gorsuch, in this case, seems to close the door on that. But the Erie case, which they refer to, sort of bites them in the back end. If you remember, the Erie case said there is no federal common law. There is no federal common law. You've got to understand what's going on. There is no federal common law, is what they keep telling you. This case reintegrates that with this case and then explains a couple things. And ultimately, I guess we'll get to the point, ultimately it comes down to the attorneys could not confine their cause to what the court then imposes that Congress insisted were within the international law reasons limited to what was stated, not all causes that they also, by judicial fiat, excise because there is no federal common law. And then they define the common law in an interesting way in this case that you have to listen to. Don't argue with it. Just listen. Observe the horror. And position yourself accordingly. That the attorneys did not bring the case pursuant to the law that the court would take it through, kicked them out of the standing. This is really an issue over standing, not that the corporations were given allowed to traffic in children, though it looks like some of the evidence could be said that they're doing that had the case been filed where it could be filed, not domestically under domestic corporation law. But we look at a footnote, a closer look at the Supreme Court defined common law. They define it. Even though they say there's no federal common law, they actually gave a definition of what it is. It's, as we have all, I've always had a problem, in the nature of. It's in this word, the fashion. It's a fashion. It's a cloth that they throw over to disguise this stuff. They use the term in a footnote, common law fashion. And this has a definition. In footnote 1, it says, other, quote, enclaves, got to go look, this is all constitutional international law stuff, enclaves in which federal courts develop legal principles in a common law fashion include, for example, the areas of admiralty law, disputes between states, and some aspects of federal labor. If you don't understand how high level the stuff I talk about behind this wood shed to tell you where we are when I offer suggestions, it's all in these cases, in these little excerpts that are sent to me that I see and find, that I don't know if people read and find themselves. But it's just intriguing to me. We don't have a common law because of Erie versus Tompkins 1938, coincidentally being changed at the time they stacked the courts and changed this country, and get back to that in a second. We have common law fashion, which is defined as admiralty. Disputes against amongst the states. What's that? Disputes amongst the states is the states abroad each other. Admiralty in international law. The states abroad each other. The states were floating islands of republics, countries unto themselves, floating in this temporal sea abroad each other. And until I saw the courts discussing, I wish I could find that case, it really wasn't quite making sense how this really works in admiralty, but then you start to see it. The states are abroad each other. You see it listed right here. Areas of admiralty, disputes between states, and apparently some aspects of federal law, labor law, are in admiralty. Right there in that opinion, if you want to go read it, that the sensationalized part of this is that the corporations are allowed to do child trafficking. Yeah, the state itself is doing child trafficking. Okay, so let's get to the point of it. But there is no common law. Common law is apparently fashioned in admiralty. And I knew it was admiralty or the courts are admiralty. Don't do that to yourself. Observe the horror and proceed accordingly. I found much better efficacy to do that. So, there's the common law. The federal common law is apparently fashioned in admiralty. How do you like those bell bottoms? But folks, so we look at the whole case and what the Supreme Court was saying relative to the complaint. It's not just this case. Every case has to plead sufficient facts to directly connect the actor with the wrongful act or omission and the harm within the context of a remedy. Right? So this wasn't even hard to follow. I think this is attorney error again. Okay, so I don't know if intentional or not, or I don't know. Anyway. And it needed to be tied back domestically. When you read what happened, they couldn't tie it to the domestic creation of a corporation because it ties generally to the creation of all corporations. And so the reasoning was if they attached it to that, they would go after all corporations just by the fact that they exist. And the way they described that made a little bit of sense about that part. And again, that goes back to the attorneys in the petition, specifically finding something with inside and the evidence trail that would tie them to the foreign condition under which this 1789 Act spoke. And we go down, as I say in this conversation of page 22, on more than one occasion and under no uncertain terms, foreign powers expressed their displeasure with the United States' failure to provide redress for law of nations violations against their citizens is the context of this law in context of the claim. This was sent to be, was the United States at the time, 1789, not having a law which respected diplomatic relations and diplomats under the law of nations and the violations of that. And protections. And Congress was pressed to make a law. And they made this 1789 law, which says that all cases, any cause relative to this, would have a remedy. And so this is an interesting dynamic that's set up, for those of you that may or may not have read it, understood it. It sets up an interesting problem overlooked in Erie Tompkins, which says there's no federal common law. Because the Congress, determined that they would offer a remedy at common law, and the governments of the international governments accepted that. That Erie versus Tompkins comes out much later, much later, to say there is no federal common law. Now, Sotomayor, number one, her argument in number one here in this article, as I write here, is more on to the point. If you look, read her stuff, because it's more to the point. But you also notice it conveniently ignores there is no federal common law. Because they're arguing against the imposition of the common law under 1789, which they said there is no common law. Now they got a problem. If Congress said your remedies are under common law and there is no common law, what goes on here is the problem of judicial fiat. And the gem here is where they say denied the existence, this Erie case denied the existence of federal common law, general common law, and then they say we suggested that a limited residual amount remained to create causes of action for violations of international law. And I ask, a residual from none? Is the problem of Erie? Is the problem of the judiciary looking past what Congress said would be a remedy? How is this not legislation by judicial fiat? Is, I think, the main problem with this current case. It's very fascinating for me. I hope you. There is no federal common law. It's fashioned in admiralty. International law, like I've been saying all along. I guess it's another excitement when you think about it. We get it. Let's look at the horror here. Don't complain about it. Look at it and then proceed accordingly. But this is the world you've been born into and don't know different, just like The Matrix is not a movie. And so, if there is no federal common law, it seems to me the alien provision of the 1789 Act is unconstitutional. And the Mayberry Madison, it was a question I saw late in the chat. I guess the question was, what year was that? 1803, I guess, was the answer. Mayberry Madison says the court can determine a law from Congress unconstitutional. They don't do it here. Why? I don't know. They could call that law unconstitutional. Why? Because there is no federal common law from which Congress could give a remedy. But guess what that does? That blows up the whole international scene again, doesn't it? So, we're back to the common law fashion. And then I observe here, and if you look very carefully, that the Congress says all causes of action are provided by the means something to mean something when they have to look at this right. And then maybe if you look carefully at the way they discuss this, they can stop making admiralty references. You'll see unmoored, sound, at bottom, in the common law fashion of the current courts, which are dealing in their common law fashion admiralty decisions. It's all as law, folks, as I've been saying. It's just as your medium, as money. Coincidentally, right after that stacked Supreme Court, this very case comes out. And the gold was devalued, but they couldn't divest the grantees with their gold, but the grantees also suffered the 40% reduction, didn't they? As you watch the government take over a nation and co-opt it. It's really a fascinating condition. We accept it. And so, but we are. Back to the beginning, and the people just continue to take it, and the perception management that goes on that keeps people being crickets is what I've been railing against, and the lack of actual government that we have is on the front page of this the whole time, and how we're going to hopefully rise up together mutual benefit to destroy what has been built up around us that we have no clue about otherwise than when you get behind the woodshed. Grimner, thank you for what you do at reallibertymedia.com. Thank you very much for all that time you put in and keep it going. And to anybody else that can syndicate and get the word out, folks, just pass the word around and get yourself, gird thy loins, get yourself protected up. I'll be with you next week, tech diffs or nature willing.